Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Talk Live. Welcome to the program here. You can join the show if you want to, or you can just sit back and listen. It is completely up to you. Joining you tonight is Ian
and Chris.
We got some news, international level news, about a cryptocurrency crackdown that's apparently happening in India. We're talking about billions of dollars worth of cryptocurrency are being moved out of the country, apparently. As the people of India try to avoid this particular crackdown. You're going to tell us about that coming up here tonight, Chris. Related news, the Federal Reserve and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency and the FDIC have issued a joint statement this week talking about or warning about quote-unquote significant risks that crypto assets may pose to the broader banking system. I'm not sure exactly how it is that crypto is going to be a threat to the banking system beyond the fact that it's just a better alternative and it could outcompete the banking system. But I don't know if that's what they're going to get into here. According to the agencies in a joint statement, quote, it is important that risks related to the crypto asset sector that cannot be mitigated or controlled do not migrate to the banking system, statement said. Further, quote, given the significant risks highlighted by recent failures of several large crypto asset companies, the agencies continue to take a careful and cautious approach related to current or proposed crypto asset-related activities and exposures at each banking regulation or banking organization. Unquote. Regulators are warning banks about a long laundry list of risks when it comes to crypto, including fraud, volatility, poor risk management, and contagion within the crypto sector. The agencies also flagged legal uncertainties when it comes to redemptions, ownership rights, and custody practices for crypto assets. Tuesday's statement came just minutes before Sam Bankman-Fried, co-founder and former CEO of FTX Exchange, pleaded not guilty on 8 counts of wire fraud, securities fraud, and conspiracy. He's facing up to 115 years in prison for his alleged role in the highest-profile crypto collapse to date. While regulators are still studying whether or how banks could incorporate crypto into their operations in a safe way that protects consumers, the trifecta of regulators say issuing or holding crypto that's issued, stored, or transferred on an open, public, or decentralized network is, quote, inconsistent, unquote, with safe and sound banking practices. So they're not coming right out and saying thou shalt not do this, or that it's illegal into cryptocurrency, but they're basically coming, you know, they're skirting the line of saying, if you do this, this could be trouble. We won't look kindly on you banks who might be open-minded enough to actually consider allowing your customers to invest in cryptocurrency.
I'm still failing to understand what they're suggesting is the safety aspect of it, right?
Well, there's risk involved.
What's the risk?
Price could go down.
This dollar goes down every day.
Yes, of course, but it's planned to go down. You can expect the dollar to go down, so you know what you're getting into. Of course, there's also the risk of stocks as well, which could certainly go down in value. But somehow, government safe. Yeah. I mean, it's just the whole thing is just absolutely absurd on its face. I mean, how many people have lost their ass investing in stocks and then having the stock market crash or whatever, or those stocks in particular just happen to go down, and they lose their entire investment. And the government's just going to pat itself on the back and say, well, it's okay, it's regulated.
I wonder if there's any warnings anywhere about converting to any other government currency, any other dirty fiat, because
You mean other world government, international?
Because, and I say that because if you look at a lot of countries, there's hyperinflation.
Venezuela.
Like Venezuela, and I'm trying to think of some of the others, but yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of them. And certainly
Turkey,
if you look
I think, might be feeling some inflation.
I don't know if they've hit hyperinflation, but they're certainly, yeah, it's certainly, so hyperinflation is like
50% over a year.
Yeah. So if it's, I think they may have, but
There was another one we talked about recently, and I also don't recall.
You can have high inflation, and the U.S. currently has high inflation, but it's not hyperinflation, right?
Mm-hmm. So, at least if you believe the government's numbers. We did show that it was produce that had gone up 30% in just 1 month. Like, it was November. U.S. produce prices shot up 30% in a month.
I believe it.
So, I mean, you extrapolate that out. I mean, I'm not saying it's 30% every month or whatever, but over a year, it may be true that produce prices are in hyperinflation mode.
Yeah.
You know? So it just depends on how you look at the numbers. But based on the agency's current, this is more from their statement. Based on the agency's current understanding and experience to date, I already read that one. So they're saying that they're saying that having cryptocurrency stored with banks is potentially not quote-unquote safe. Further, the agencies have significant safety and soundness concerns with business models that are concentrated in crypto asset-related activities or have concentrated exposures to the crypto asset sector. The agencies are overseeing banks that may be exposed to risks from the crypto sector and reviewing any proposals from banks to engage in crypto activities. So apparently they have to, these banks, I mean, these banks are just so cautious, right? Like, in general, banks have been very afraid of cryptocurrency from the beginning. And it may not be so much as that they're afraid of what cryptocurrency could mean for their own existence in the future. Some of these banks, and I'm basing this on an actual conversation I had with a bank president several years ago, I think at this point, there was a local bank in this area that's sort of a regional area bank. And they were going to close one of my accounts. And normally when a bank sends you a breakup letter, it's this very kind of terse corporate thing where, you know, you don't even know who signed the letter. And it just basically says, our terms of service say, we can break up with you anytime we want to, and we don't have to tell you why. So, bye-bye. That's usually how it goes when a corporate bank breaks up with you. But this local bank, the letter was actually signed by the bank president, and it had his office phone number at the bottom and an invitation to reach out if I had any questions. So, yeah, I got questions. and I reached out, and dude scheduled a meeting with me and Chris Reitman, and we sat down with him for an hour, more than an hour, and just kind of talked to him about, you know, where he's at in banking and where he's coming from and just kind of why the account was being shut down and just all the questions that we had about, you know, being a banker in this world of cryptocurrency. And what he said was basically that, you know, they are deathly afraid of the federal government. They're deathly afraid of the banking regulators. And so they have to be really, really cautious, right? They just can't jump into some new thing without really doing a lot of research. And he felt as though that he didn't know enough about cryptocurrency. And apparently he is the bank president, apparently has to, because it's the size of the institution, he has to sign off on all outgoing wire transfers. And he realized he could not knowingly sign off on these wire transfers because he just didn't feel comfortable enough with where they were going. Ultimately, he didn't know enough about cryptocurrency. At least this is what he told me. And so that was the end of it. Like, he's, sorry, we're just not comfortable enough with your account, so we're just going to close it off because we're afraid of what the regulators might do.
Yeah, I mean, they're holding a license. You have to have some sort of license in order to, you know, operate a bank.
And federal as well.
Yeah, if you don't do what the government is wanting you to do, and they won't even tell you what to do. They're just going to, they'll send you threatening letters, but they won't tell you what to do. And then you have to comply. And it's like, well, okay, well, what are you supposed to do? Well, effectively, the only thing you can do in many cases is shut down people's accounts. So,
rather than try to figure out the way through the regulatory structure that, as you say, they won't even give you instructions on.
Right, right. And there's some good examples of this, that have, letters that the government has sent two banks have, or all financial institutions. And one of these letters went out, I don't know, probably within the last 5 years even, and it was in relation to people who have worked in the legal sex industry.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, despite the fact
Not illegal. Right. It's completely legal. These people are, like, making pornography, for instance, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, in states where it's legal or whatever, yeah. Right? And it doesn't, you know, and it's not illegal at the federal level or anything, but because right. You know, there's, you know, the banks or the government's letter doesn't say in the legal industry, but how do you tell or distinguish between somebody who is doing something legally and not?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what it basically did was, because there's so much risk there, they're forced to shut down anybody, even if they're not in the sex industry currently, even people who have been out of the sex industry for 20 years, their accounts still got closed at every single financial institution because none of the financial institutions could do anything other than shut down because, you know, and they use words. They don't say words like, in the sex industry, they'll say things like sex trafficking, but then they don't define sex trafficking.
Right.
And so, and it's become this all-encompassing word. So it ends up including legal activities that have, you know, no, you know, yeah.
Yeah. On the point about sex trafficking, I was reading, there's somebody on Twitter who represents herself as a victim of sex trafficking, and she's like speaking out and, you know, that kind of thing. And on its face, it sounds fine, but then I saw this other post, I don't remember if it was from her, I think it might have been, and it essentially was like widening the definition of sex trafficking, like you were talking about, because when you think about sex trafficking, or at least when I think about it, I think someone is a sex slave, someone is being held against their will, they're, for instance, having their family threatened, because that's in a lot of cases when somebody, you know, is either kidnapped to be forced into sex slavery. They're told things like, well, look, if you try to run, we're just going to go ahead and kill your parents, right? Like, that's the kind of thing.
Right.
That's why they stay in the hotel room or whatever instead of just trying to make a run for it.
Yeah, that's not what they mean by sex trafficking these days.
Not these days. No, they basically were saying that anyone who's, like, manipulated in some way, like if somebody hires you to do a thing and they didn't quite tell you everything.
And manipulation includes being paid.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So anybody who's ever worked in the sex industry is has been trafficked, basically, is what they would say. That crazy.
Yeah.
And it's obviously, you know.
And so the banks don't want to be associated with quote unquote sex trafficking, even if it's
legal.
They
can't afford to be if the government's telling them, you know, we're going to take your license away and then they can't operate. And yeah.
It's, right. And so now you have this letter from the FDIC, from the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, and the Federal Reserve. These are the three top banking regulatory agencies that is almost essentially telling banks that, hey, we don't think you should do this. We don't think those of you few banks, and there's only a few of them, who are open-minded enough to actually accept accounts from cryptocurrency-related businesses, to potentially even allow their own customers to hold or to purchase cryptocurrencies through their banking system. They are being told that.
What I'm curious about is, who do you think this is targeting? Because I can't imagine. I mean, banks are already so they won't do business with you if you use cryptocurrency. Like, so who are these?
There are a few that are friendly.
Are they targeting? Because it seems to me like they're targeting cryptocurrency exchanges and similar.
Well, I think what they want to do is dry up the options for the crypto exchanges. Now, there's a bank called Silvergate Bank. It's based out of California. They are kind of known as the crypto exchange bank, meaning that this is a bank that will actually open accounts for cryptocurrency exchanges, and they make you do all kinds of hoop jumping, of course, right? Because they're not just going to allow anybody to open an account. They're going to do their due diligence and verify you got all the government paperwork and et cetera. They were involved with the FTX exchange, and I don't know. I've seen some of the headlines. I've not dug deeply into the stories. It looks like it did not go well for them in that particular case. So that could be part of why these regulatory agencies are kind of coming in heavier than ever on this. I don't think they've gone out of business or anything like that, but they may have lost some money on that deal because they had some sort of involvement with FTX. But they're not the only ones. There are some other banks out there. There was one in Vegas that was actually purchased. It was just kind of like a local bank. It only had two branches. It was in Vegas, and it was purchased. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it, but it was purchased by a cryptocurrency sort of magnate or whatever, some guy that's been very successful with crypto. I don't know if he's involved in exchanges or whatever, but he wanted to have a bank that would have been friendly towards potentially cryptocurrency accounts. So there's probably no more than like five of them, but there are some. I mean, there's also the ones that will do business with, like Uphold, which is a cryptocurrency kind of exchange thing that has a crypto debit card as well. And so whenever you get one of these crypto debit cards, you look on the back, and it will say account provided by blankety blank bank, right? So there's one that's Metropolitan Commercial Bank. I've seen that one. They're based in New York City. Sutton Bank is another one. So there's a few banks that, you know, when you open an account with Uphold, you're opening an account with a financial tech firm, not a bank. But they sort of on your behalf have an account from which that debit card operates.
Do they have other? Does Uphold have like an exchange, like, or is it just strictly?
It's not an exchange in the sort of traditional sense, but I believe you can. It has been a while since I could use Uphold, you know, with my bail conditions.
Well, back in those days.
But if I recall correctly, there was a way to exchange between cryptocurrencies or purchase cryptocurrencies with dollar deposits from a bank account there. But it's not like the traditional kind of exchange where you can put in a, you know, a limit purchase on a on an exchange and then it just sits and waits for somebody to buy it. So it wasn't, it's not that sort of exchange.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, what enabled them to do what they did versus, you know, maybe some other crypto exchange or, you know, because you'd almost think that you would do an exchange. If you're going to jump through all those hoops, right, you would do an exchange or you would do more than just that. But something's limited. I mean, if they're limiting themselves, it sounds like they may not.
They may have just a different business model, right? So these crypto-fueled debit cards, of which there are a large variety in the marketplace these days. For listeners that aren't familiar, the idea is that you get a traditional-looking Visa/MasterCard debit card, and in the background of that debit card, there's a way to kind of load it with a balance based on cryptocurrency. Not that the card itself has Bitcoin attached to it per se. Most of them don't. Most of them, you can like load Bitcoin into your account and then you can authorize it to say, all right, I want to take $300 worth of this Bitcoin and put the $300 in cash onto this card. And so that's what most of them do. To that extent, that could result in those companies getting a portion of the fees, right? So whenever you check out at a merchant, they might be paying 3% to the credit card company.
Right.
There may be a deal there, and I'm just speculating, right, that Uphold, maybe they get 1% of the 3%, and then Visa gets 2%. That's a possibility, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, they may be looking at that as, well, we'd rather make our money on that than have to deal with the hassle of running a Bitcoin exchange or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are certain aspects of the law that say things like for profit. So you kind of have to wonder, did they sell the Bitcoin or, like I said, did they buy the Bitcoin from people, but they didn't make a profit off that, but then they made the profit off the fees
off
from the swiping.
Fees, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe that got around some of the hoop jumping in order to reduce their costs.
And maybe that would, if that's true, maybe that would allow some of the banks to feel more comfortable doing business
maybe,
with those companies.
Yeah. I don't know. Interesting questions.
Yeah. So, you know, right now you got the OCC, according to the story here at Yahoo Finance. The OCC, the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, this is a top banking regulator, they put in place rules where banks must now ask permission to be able to engage in any cryptocurrency activities. The acting comptroller of the currency, Michael Hsu, has compared crypto to derivatives in the early 2000s, warning about the risk of contagion with crypto and saying the industry's growth has been driven by hype. Now, maybe that's true to some extent. There has been a lot of hype in the last several years around cryptocurrency. There's been a lot of growth simply surrounding the idea of number go up. Hey, yeah. Investment, best investment of the last decade. Don't miss out. You know, that kind of thing, right? So people are definitely, there were a lot of people jumping in for FOMO, which is the fear of missing out. So there's no doubt that that did drive a lot of crypto sales. That's probably what was behind the big crypto spike in 2017 and the big crypto spike in 2021.
Dot-com bubble all over again.
Yeah, but the reality is, those of us that know a thing or two about cryptocurrency know that underneath that hype, there really is technology worthy of being excited about.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, whether that's what people were being excited about as opposed to number go up, that's up to the individual, you know, as to why they want to invest or purchase something.
I was always amazed, you know, people like buy into it just for the sake of holding it. I've always been like, if I'm going to invest in something, like I want to invest in something surrounding it, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe getting it out there. You
a
know?
Concept.
Yeah.
Something that's important.
Vending machines, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, merchant tools to enable businesses to accept it or, you know, something that like, because just holding it doesn't get it used. And what's the value? The value is in its ability to reduce the cost. At least one of the things that I think that has value in it is the ability to reduce the cost of conducting transactions.
Yes.
As you were saying earlier, you know, every time you swipe a card, you're paying 3%. You know, mm-hmm. your prices are going up by 3% or more. I see occasionally 6%. Actually, for those charges,
Discover can be that high for
sure. It can be. It depends on the type of card somebody mm-hmm. has. It depends on if it's a U.S. card or an international or a card outside the United States. There's a bunch of different factors that go into it, and then double that because you know you got to buy you as a merchant have to buy products too.
And what if they're using your card to do that?
In many cases, you have no other choice other than to use a credit card.
Right.
So it's amazing how much the banks and financial institutions, you know, basically cause prices to go up like fairly substantially in some cases.
No wonder they are, you know, so desperate to stop cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, credit to the handful of banks out there that are open-minded enough and forward-thinking enough to say, this doesn't look good for us in the future. Maybe we should embrace this new competition rather than trying to shut them out, rather than trying to pretend they don't exist or act like, you know, it's dangerous. And, of course, that's what this whole point of this article is here, is to have these government agencies saying, ooh, it's scary. Cryptocurrency is dangerous. It's risky. And so, and the fact is they can't control it. That's what they ultimately are admitting here, is that we cannot regulate this. We cannot control it. And so therefore, since we cannot control it or regulate it, you, those entities that we do regulate, shall not touch it without our permission, which we're no longer going to give you. The number here is 603-283-6160. It hasn't gotten to the point where you cannot send a wire transfer to a crypto exchange, but what would stop them from doing that in the future? It's Free Talk Live.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update. There's a massive police presence at an Atlanta area mall after at least one person's been shot. Police confirm it happened at Perimeter Mall in Dunwoody, a suburb of Atlanta. One person's been taken into custody. According to Dunwoody police, there is not an active shooter. No word on the condition of the victim. The Buffalo Bills say DeMar Hamlin's breathing tube was removed overnight. The team added physicians from the University of Cincinnati Medical Center said Hamlin continues to progress progressed remarkably in his recovery.
Completely neurologically intact, good lung function, no cardiac dysfunction. The best outcome would be back to who he was before this all happened.
And the rain and snow totals are impressive in Northern California after a series of atmospheric river storms, and more is on the way. For example, heavy rain dumped on the Bay Area as well as up to 10 inches in Alameda and Sonoma County. Dave Collins, USA News.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A 1-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live. Phones are open. If you want to join us here, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Maybe you're aware of some of these, the few crypto-friendly banks that are out there right now, because apparently the Office of Comptroller of the Currency and Federal Reserve and the FDIC are issuing a notice to all banking institutions saying, hey, look, we're not saying you can't do this, but we're basically saying you can't do this.
Trying to ban it without actually an explicit ban, it sounds like.
Yeah, they're basically putting pressure on the bank saying, look, this is risky, this is dangerous. We wouldn't want you, our trusted banking institutions, to be involved in anything that could bring your customers risk. So therefore, we think you should stay away from these things. In fact, we're going to require you to ask for our permission before you get involved in any kind of crypto-related activities. Now, I don't know what that's going to mean for the banks that are already involved in crypto-related activities, the handful of them that are doing that sort of thing. But if you want to comment, maybe you're in the banking industry, maybe you're in the crypto world, you want to join us here, the number is 603-283-6160. It seems like lines are being drawn, sort of lines in the sand, by the federal government saying, we would advise you not cross that line.
Is this is this an actual letter that was sent to the banks, or how did they...
Apparently, let me see if I can get the exact definition of what this thing was here. The report is from Yahoo Finance, and it is a statement. So they issued a joint statement.
So maybe like a letter to the banks or something like that.
It is apparently a 2-3 page long joint statement on crypto asset risks to banking organizations. So I don't know if that gets sent to all of the banks by default, or it's just they're expected to know about it.
It's definitely not as clear as some of the things that have been reported on in the past as to certain industries that, you know, the government has said, you better not do business with these people.
I actually did just pull up the actual letter here, and, you know, we were just reading the report on it, but I just happened to spot this. It says, banking organizations are neither prohibited nor discouraged from providing banking services to customers of any specific class or type as permitted by law or regulation. The agencies are continuing to assess whether or how current and proposed crypto asset-related activities by banking organizations can be conducted in a manner that adequately addresses safety and soundness, consumer protection, legal permissibility, and compliance with applicable laws and regulations, including anti-money laundering and illicit finance statutes and rules. Based on the agency's current understanding and experience to date, the agencies believe that issuing or holding as principal crypto assets that are issued, stored, or transferred on an open public or decentralized network or similar system is highly likely to be inconsistent with safe and sound banking practices. So in the same paragraph, they're saying, look, we're not telling you you can't do this. I mean, if it's legal, then you can do it, but it may be considered,
you know,
to be inconsistent with safe and sound banking practices.
You know what it sounds like they're saying is, effectively, this may be legal, but we'll suspend your licenses if you go down this path because it violates... They didn't outright say it violates... like their licensure, but
they're coming right up to the line.
Right. They're coming right up to that line and saying it without saying it. And this is exactly the same thing that they've done in the past, you know, with other industries that the government, they're completely legal industries, but the government doesn't want banks or financial institutions to do business with you. And therefore they say they did the exact same thing.
Further, the agencies have significant safety and soundness concerns with business models that are concentrated in crypto asset related activities or have concentrated exposures to the crypto asset sector. So they're just saying they're concerned. They're worried for their banking friends that they may get into hot water with these regulators. Now, they're not saying they're turning the temperature up quite yet, but the water could be getting hot for you if you decide to get involved with these crypto-related activities. We would just like to let you know that we're monitoring the situation closely. And it's like, you know, these bankers aren't known for taking risks with their business, right? They're not going to risk regulatory attack. They're not going to risk pissing off the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency or the Federal Reserve or the FDIC, because if they piss those people off, they're out of business. Like you said, they'll pull the license, and you don't have a bank anymore after that. If you try to operate, I remember years ago we had somebody call in. Actually, it was a friend of the it was a host on the show who knew someone in California who had opened a warehouse bank. And he shouldn't have used the word bank, number one. But number two, they probably would have shut him down anyway. But what the dude was doing was he was offering essentially deposit services for people while not being an actual registered legal bank. And guess what happened to him?
They'll definitely fry you for that.
Yeah, they came in with armed thugs, and they put a stop to his warehouse bank.
Yeah, people have been doing that since the 90s, at least, maybe probably even earlier than that. But I remember hearing about people getting, charged and, thrown through the system for basically doing similar kinds of stuff.
That's probably when this happened.
Oh, okay.
Based on when we were talking about it, it was more than a decade ago that we talked about it.
It's definitely happened repeatedly over, decades. But,
I mean, just look at what they're doing to, prior to cryptocurrency, there was another great alternative. Of course, we're big fans of gold and silver here on Free Talk Live, and we've been telling you about Bullion Max, for instance. BullionMax.com/FTL is, of course, where you can go to get some of the most stable assets in recorded history, which are gold and silver. BullionMax.com/FTL is where you can get their special silver starter kit, employee pricing for Free Talk Live listeners there. It's 5 ounces of silver from the world's most popular mints, and they'll throw in a free gold back for you as well. So go to BullionMax.com/FTL. But before, you've been able to order things like gold and silver products from Bullion Max and companies like it for decades. But what they were doing with the Liberty dollar back in the aughts, so the last, two decades ago at this point, was they were creating an alternative currency. They weren't just selling silver rounds. They were selling these beautiful pieces. You can't call them coins because that's like a legal term. But they were selling ounces of silver that were intended to be used as a currency. They weren't just intended to sit in a safe until the S hits the fan, and then maybe you'll need them someday, the kind of thing. The intention was to exchange them with people for products and services. That was the idea behind the Liberty Dollar. And for years, they were the number one alternative currency. This is, again, prior to crypto. So from basically, I think, 1998 on through about 2007, they issued millions of dollars worth of the Liberty Dollar. I was involved with them back 20 years ago as one of their what they call Liberty Associates, where I would get sort of a wholesale rate and then try to get them out into the community. I wasn't particularly successful at it, but they were really beautiful pieces, and just the people that understood and appreciated silver were big fans of them. And the federal government was not a big fan, because they came in, they went to the vault, they went to the mint where the Liberty Dollar was produced. I believe it was called Sunshine Mint in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And they came there with however many goons that they had. They came in. They were allowed in to the, you know, the Sunshine Mint. There's armed guards at the front, of course, but they're not going to stop the government from coming in. And they took all of the Liberty Dollar silver that was in that vault. So in addition to making actual physical rounds that they were distributing, they also made warehouse receipts. So they had these certificates, basically, that were good, supposedly were good for 1 ounce of silver that was being stored in the warehouse. Well, until the feds took it all. And years later, they ended up having to give it back after a court case. There was like a lawsuit or something like that. But not everybody got it back. I didn't get mine back just because I didn't want to join the lawsuit. I was just like, you know what? I don't want to put my name on a list or whatever, even though my name was probably already on a list. But
that's funny coming from you.
Yeah, I didn't get mine back. But they did have to give them back ultimately. But they destroyed the Liberty Dollar business. They destroyed it as an organization. They went after Bernard von Notthaus, who was its founder, for quote-unquote counterfeiting charges. And a jury found him guilty.
Yeah, of those charges. Our system is so messed up. I mean, it's like it doesn't matter if you're 100% right. You're within the law.
Yeah.
They just get a jury that's so biased against, you know,
right,
a defendant, and that's it, you know. You at best, even when you're 100% obviously innocent, you have a 50-50 chance. And that's the best case scenario. You should be 100%. You should be 100% no chance that, you know, if you're innocent, there should never be a conviction. But nope, that's not how it is.
Look at
the
Crypto 6 case. It happened all over again. I mean, we did legal research to make sure. And so did Bernard von Notthaus from the Liberty Dollar. He figured he had all his T's crossed and all his I's dotted. And he'd been in business for almost a decade at that point, doing this thing of distributing this alternative currency. And they came in and they destroyed him. And then there was, of course, e-gold, if you recall that one. That was an online gold currency kind of thing. That this is, again, pre-crypto. So it was this sort of, it was still a centralized system. It wasn't, you know, like Bitcoin where it was decentralized or anything. So they went after the e-gold corporation. They took it down, too.
The Crypto 6 case is so crazy because it's like, you know, okay, there's government officials telling you what you're doing is legal. You've got you've got lawyers telling you what you're doing is legal, right? Yeah. You're operating, you're doing more KYC than the banks are doing that you're not even really required to do. It's like, I mean,
but the banks aren't getting charged. They're not going to prison. They're not going to be...
Not a single one of those, so-called victims in that case.
They're not going to pay a single fine.
Yeah, the banks lost nothing, and the prosecution said that. And the victims, the banks didn't stop. The banks are actually supposed to do KYC, but obviously they either didn't or it didn't stop the transactions from occurring anyway.
Yeah.
The only person I think that those victims, those so-called victims, said ever even reached out to them was you.
That's my recollection of what happened during the trial.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, if you want to read more about the Crypto 6 case, you can go to freekeen.com, where Chris spent 3 weeks of his life sitting in a courtroom writing excessive notes and then transcribing them onto various detailed blog posts. And I've heard many people say they really appreciated that, Chris. So if I haven't told you personally, I've definitely heard about it.
Left and right, I've heard people saying it. So I'm glad, because it means that people were I don't know how many people read it, but there were definitely people who read the whole thing. And I was I'm actually surprised.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, if you read that whole, even just a single day worth,
it's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
So anyway, if you want to comment here, you're welcome to join us. The number is 603-283-6160. But as I was saying, it sounds like the feds are kind of drawing a line in the sand. They're basically telling the banks, hey, look, we're not saying you can't do this, but basically if you do it, we're going to jump down your throat and you're going to hate life. So don't do this, okay? It's legal for you to do it, but don't do it. And that's where it seems to be coming from. And, of course, they're using the FTX situation as their excuse for coming in and issuing these most recent notices. Oh, it's like, oh, okay, someone in business failed. Wow, this doesn't happen. Businesses don't fail. Somebody in business failed, so therefore this entire business is now on the outs. We cannot trust you guys to have banking, provide banking services to businesses that could fail.
Mm.
Oh, wait, that happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yep.
Businesses fail. That's what happens.
Look at the dot-com bust.
Right.
I mean, people invested in businesses that had literally no business models. They had no value. There wasn't any perceivable value in many cases.
How many of those got bank loans, I wonder?
I mean, they certainly got investors, lots of investors. Mm-hmm. I mean, all those investors lost their shirt. Now, it doesn't mean that the crazy thing is, like, it's not even like all the businesses in the dot-com era were bad or couldn't necessarily work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them could, but a lot of them went under still. But some of them were just ahead of their time,
or
you know, they needed, you know, larger numbers and there wasn't enough people on the internet yet,
poor management. Who knows?
Right. Poor management, or overspending, you know, because they were competing with other businesses mm-hmm. that had all this free money, so to speak. And so they were paying too much, you know, per customer. I'm trying to think what
acquisition.
They call it. Acquisition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Customer acquisition numbers were, you know, they were just paying too much per customer,
right.
Basically. So.
Here's more about the FTX situation. So this is a related story from The Hill. The digital dollar coming in on the back of the FTX collapse. The arrest of Sam Bankman-Fried may be the smaller news story coming out of the collapse of FTX. Politicians will miss the point surrounding the massive political donations of the company and instead push for simplistic solutions to a complex issue. Ultimately, the collapse of the crypto company could lead to onerous federal regulations and the establishment of a federal digital dollar. Now, look, I don't think that, you know, if they're using FTX as the excuse for the digital dollar, it doesn't really connect for me. It doesn't really make any sense. Why would they need to have a failed crypto exchange to launch a digital dollar on? I mean, they already have all the rationale that they need for the digital dollar. For them, it's more control. Total control of people's finances, total awareness of what people will be spending money on, and that's all the reason they need right there.
I get why somebody would adopt a cryptocurrency, like an actual cryptocurrency. I don't mean a stablecoin, but an actual cryptocurrency. Decentralized, you know, you control it, etc. I don't understand why somebody would want, like, what's the incentive for somebody to go and adopt, a U.S. digital dollar? Like,
somebody, are you talking about... When you say somebody, do you mean an individual or a business?
I mean like an individual, right? Like why would somebody go out of
welfare
the way?
Payments.
For payments?
Welfare payments.
Welfare payments. Okay. I'm just trying to think, like, how are they going to sell this to the public? Because it doesn't seem, and I feel like we even have a story where somebody rolled out the first digital dollar, I think Nigeria has one. Yeah, but I think it totally failed.
It is not being accepted well by the people of Nigeria.
Yeah,
apparently.
And it just kind of makes, you know, begs the question of, like, okay, you've got all of this backing, you got government backing and mm-hmm. everything, and they can't make it work, and then you ask the question of, well, why? And it's because it doesn't have any of the things that makes, you know, an actual cryptocurrency valuable, right? It doesn't have, you don't have the control, you don't have the freedom, you don't have the liberty.
Which is exactly why they want it. That's exactly why they want to shove it down people's throats.
Right.
And that's, in my opinion, that's how they're going to do it, Chris, is they're going to force people to accept it if they want to get government payments. Hmm. And if you think about the number of people who are receiving government payments, it's significant, right? Like, I mean, we've seen some of the estimates over the years that maybe as many as 50% of U.S. households have someone in them who is receiving some form of government payment. And that could include contractors, right? That could include individuals on welfare. So there's a whole range of types of people that are getting government money. Everybody on Social Security, anybody getting Medicaid or Medicare.
I'm always wondering, like, How many of those people are actually getting money, free money, so to speak, and how many of them are just getting their money back?
Because they take so much from us just across the board. Like, you know, even people who are poor, they're still paying taxes. They're paying hidden taxes.
Unless it's Sarah. You know, she's probably getting more than she pays in, right?
You might be right. Yeah. But it's such a large percentage of, I think the way to phrase it is, I think they call them working poor, right? So people who are actually, you know, doing something, they're productive people, right? But,
right.
You know, they're paying tax, they're paying all these hidden taxes, and yes, they're getting money from the government, so to speak, but that money is probably coming from their own pocket. It's coming from their employers.
Good chance of it.
It's coming from, you know, the increased prices that they're paying at the store.
Right. Big time. What are the employers paying in Social Security, like 15% or something like that? I think 14, 15,
yeah,
somewhere in that range, 13 and a half.
I think it's like 15%, and then another 15% comes out of your paycheck. So you're paying, it ends up being like something like 30%. But that's,
oh, I thought it was 15, half, one, I thought it was 7.5 and 7.5.
Okay, so self-employment is 30%. Which
I was talking about employees.
Right, but self-employment covers everything that your employer and you would be paying in.
I
so
see. Okay.
It's, as
well,
I
then there's the FICA or whatever. There's all these other things, right?
And that's not, 30% doesn't sound like, might not sound like a lot, but what I think people are forgetting is that there's all these other taxes that they're paying that they don't know about.
Taxes.
And yeah, like for example, 25%, if you buy any kind of electronics in the United States right now, 25% of the price is basic, well, or maybe even twice that, tariffs. And so the company importing it is paying the government, and then they're increasing their prices. So you're still paying. You're paying these taxes you don't even know about, and that's on top of the sales taxes in most states.
Sure. And then every gas tax, you know, you're paying all the
– right.
When you pay for that piece of electronics, not only are you paying for the import fee or whatever, the tariff, but you're also paying the tax that the trucker – who the professional driver that took that to the Best Buy or whatever also had to pay. I mean, you can't even calculate those numbers are.
I don't even think the gas tax is so much, you know, I mean, I understand the gas tax isn't actually going to the roads, but anyway.
You're paying the tax on the electricity that the store that you bought the TV from is displaying the TV to you with.
There's usually going to be some sort of property taxes that you're paying
that too.
Of the store because that increases the prices. You know,
it sure
there's
does.
All these hidden taxes and it adds up and you end up paying. I figured at one point it's probably something like high 70s, 80% of your income's going to government, basically.
Insane.
But it's, I think from what I've heard, other people have said it's actually way higher than that.
We would be so much wealthier if we didn't have the federal government lording over our lives and extracting so much wealth. And now you're talking about, I'm sure the 70 or 80 or 90 or whatever it is all levels of government combined.
Yeah.
But I suspect the feds are the largest chunk of that.
Yeah, that's a good question.
They've got to be.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting question. I don't know. I haven't ever done the math that way. I usually just like kind of add up, you know, things like tariffs and you know, sales taxes and income taxes and property taxes and then figure it out. And property taxes are pretty high though too.
They are, but not always, not everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to join us, join the discussion. The number here is 603-283-6160. But that was an aside from the discussion of the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, and you were wondering aloud, well, how are they going to do this? If people don't want to stop using cash, how are they going to stop them, right?
They could go the India route where they just ban all bills over like $1.23 or something like that.
That's one idea. We know they've already banned the $500 and the $1,000 bill. That's been in play for decades.
Right.
So, and that was to quote-unquote fight drug dealing, right, back when they did that?
Yep.
And, of course, it hasn't stopped drug selling at all, but it's just made it a little more inconvenient. Now the drug dealer has to carry a whole briefcase of cash instead of, you know, a fifth of a briefcase of cash. It's stupid. But they're going to do welfare payments. That's an easy way to get people hooked on the government CBDC money is, all right, well, starting on, you know, January 1st, 2025, all welfare payments are going to be through the CBDC. You're going to need to download the new Federal Reserve wallet, and you've got you've got until January, and then we're going to cut you off. So go ahead and get signed up as soon as you can, and we'll get you your welfare payments there.
I think, you know, the even more devious one I suspect that they may try to play is something to that effect, where that's the default, but with tax refunds, right?
That too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Any money coming out of the federal government, once they do this, and they're still not 100% saying they're going to do it. They're just researching and studying and coming up with actual, like, working programs from MIT and things like that. So, like, they're down this rabbit hole, and the odds that they're going to stop going down it are very, very slim. But it still isn't, quote-unquote, a done deal yet. But, yeah, once it's done, any kind of payments from the government, like I said, Medicare, welfare, Social Security, tax refund, you name it.
You know what they'll do after that is they'll charge you to receive a check in the mail, or they'll charge you for a traditional wire transfer to your account for your tax refund.
That way they can't, you can't say, well, you're not, you know, you're cutting me off.
And they'll excuse that charge because it costs them money. Now, in reality, it costs them probably just as much doing it the other way. Mm-hmm. But if you look at something like toll roads, right?
Right.
It, you know, it used to be you paid the same, and then you got a discount if you had a, what they call Easy Pass on the East Coast. But now it's like, okay, well, now it's, if you look, like, they not only do you not get a discount, I put that in quotes here, but they also charge you additionally to mail a piece of paper to the owner's, the car vehicle owner's address, and then you're supposed to pay that on top of, like, additional fees.
You mean if you get caught running the toll booth? You're talking about
if not if you run the toll booth. There is no toll booth. It's called cashless tolling.
Right, right, right. But that's what you mean is when you go through the Easy Pass without the Easy Pass, and they take your picture, and then they send you the threatening letter or whatever.
Yeah. So it's you think you know, and eventually they make it so difficult to avoid and so expensive that pretty much everybody gives in. Outside of that, maybe 3% of the population just has a via. You know, they're just so. They're so against it, right? Because they see right through the lies, right? And they have principles. Outside of those that 3%, maybe, you know, pretty much everybody else gets on board.
So they're going to pay out, as you said, any kind of payment from the federal government is going to come out in the CBDC. But then the question is, how do you get businesses to accept it, right? Because it still has to be useful.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just give people the CBDC and then they can't spend it anywhere, right? So, of course, Walmart, all the big, you know, mega corporations, they're going to come on board and they're going to make it so their cash registers can accept this stuff. And then the small businesses will be pressured because, well, you don't want to miss out.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.